Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
What's that old saying, I'm not afraid of hard work, I can sit and look at it for hours every day.
That's right.
We're going to talk work today here in Connecting Faith. Welcome to the program. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls, and we're going to talk jobs today, how, ways that we can pivot to our best career. A book called Love Your Work from Robert Dickey III, and we're excited to get him on the show. But Ted, I thought we should start, the first of the year, a good time to be thinking about, all right, how are we doing on our jobs, and are we rightly aligned, all those things. What was your first job and worst job?
Oh, boy, maybe one and the same. I was in Racine, Wisconsin at the country club there and caddying on the golf course about eighth grade. That was not a fun thing, though. I had to get up at 6 in the morning, be at the golf course, carry a big bag on your shoulder in the hot sun for sometimes not very kind, wealthy people, and get a $3 tip, maybe. But that was a bit tough at that age. Turned me off to golf a little bit. Tough job would be maybe working at Burger King and overnight shift. You have to clean all the equipment and everything at 3 in the morning. You're
a little bit of grease, I suppose.
Yeah,
fryers.
Yeah, definitely.
And all that.
Yeah.
Well, my first job outside of the farm, which was actually great because it gave me an excuse to get a car.
Yeah.
So my uncle had a restaurant for a while, and so I peeled potatoes and washed pots and pans.
Oh,
so
man.
Not a lot of fun. But the malts were great.
So, yeah, there's a bonus in there.
There was Robert Dickey III is with us. So, Robert, what job and your worst job?
Well, it's great being on the program with you guys today. And let's see, my first job was I started a lawn care company when I was in high school. Mm. And so I'd work through the summers mowing lawns. And when I wasn't mowing lawns, I was out selling, trying to get new customers. And so I absolutely love that. And even today, as I get out and mow my yard, it brings back great memories. I would say my worst job, I enjoyed it, but it was difficult because I was working at a Pepsi factory during college. And I was working the midnight shift, so I'd show up around 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I would drive a forklift throughout the factory at night, loading semi trailers with product that would be delivered the next day. And that was very difficult, but it paid well for a college student. So I was very blessed to be able to have that job.
Of course, the problem is if you turn too sharp, then you got a couple of pallets of Pepsi to pick up, I suppose, right?
Well, I tell you what, I wasn't qualified to drive a forklift, and as I was getting Pepsi off of the racks, there was on more than one occasion where I had a whole thing come crashing down and Pepsi all over the factory floor and people looking around laughing at me. So I had some funny experiences.
Well, the good news now is that, Robert has good memories of those things, but he's helping others, advising others about how to find their best work. And Robert Dickey III is president of Crown Financial Ministries, and he's author of several books, including The Leap, Launching Your Full-Time Career in a Part-Time Economy. And the book we're referencing today is Love Your Work, Four Practical Ways You Can Pivot to Your Best Career. And he's had work span multiple industries. He served in the military. He's a decorated Air Force officer. He was the CEO of an international company, leader of several nonprofits, and I was honored to have him back with us here in Connecting Faith. So, Robert, let's talk a little bit about in the book, as you address Love Your Work, and hopefully everybody does, but the reality is that there are a lot of people that don't, and you remind us that no one else is responsible for our careers, that it's up to us. Talk a little bit about that mindset.
Yeah, as I've counseled people around the country and around the world for that matter, there's a lot of times where I'll run into folks and be like, oh, I really dislike my job or I dislike my boss. A Wall Street Journal article recently stated that over 80% of people within the workforce either dislike their job or their boss. And so there's a lot of people that are disenfranchised. And so sometimes you meet people just like, well, I'm hoping that I'll find something or I'm hoping that something changes. And my encouragement to them is nobody is going to care more about your career than you. And so whatever your level is of caring, that's the most. And so we've got to kind of craft and create our own plans and not just hope that something's going to change. So if we find ourselves in a situation where we're not satisfied for a number of different reasons, maybe we're looking for a different opportunity or something needs to change, we have to be the change agent. We have to be the one that steps into it, starts crafting a plan, taking steps. And it's amazing what will happen, how God will open up doors of opportunity when we start to walk in faith and take action on in our own hands.
It's easy, though, to I know one of the chapters we'll maybe get into a little bit later is that we do need to be direct about this, don't we, and specific, because we tend, if we're looking for something else, or maybe even we've been laid off or unemployed, and we like say, well, maybe I'm just doing some consulting. We don't like to be maybe as honest as we should be about this area.
You're absolutely right. I see this all the time where people this happens a lot of times when people are out of work, right? So during the Great Recession, when many people were either laid off or fired, and they didn't really open up and tell people within their family or their communities. Some people would go out and kind of quasi-consult or do something. But we've got to be very intentional and design the pathway forward and let people know. It's like, look, if we're out of work, it's like, look, I've lost my job. Here's why. This is what I'm looking for. And the more laser-focused that we can be in the opportunity that we're looking for, the easier it is for us to land. If we have no idea what we want to do, we're like, well, I'm just looking for a job, but I don't really know. People around us aren't going to be able to help. But if we sit down and craft an action plan, seek God's guidance, and really understand where we want to be, and spell it out. So I'm looking for a job in this sector, in this town. This is my experience. People around us be like, oh, you know what? I know a guy at this company, or I know a gal at this company. Let me introduce you. It's our network for people who are looking for a new job or out of work. Our network and our connections and social connections are the most powerful thing that we can leverage to get introduced to those opportunities that are out there. Because most jobs currently are not advertised on those big message boards like Monster.com and other places. It's through a personal connection or a friend where we're going to get introduced to those opportunities that we may not know about.
Well, so let's talk about, you know, getting laser focused, because maybe that's where we get hung up as much as anything. Say, well, you know, I'm not really sure, or I could do this or maybe do that. So help us with that.
It's a very big problem. I think what happens is when we're in a low spot in our life. Okay, so let's imagine that 80% of people who are saying that they're disenfranchised with their work. A lot of times, people just don't know where to go. They don't know where to turn. They know they're not satisfied, or something's wrong, or they're out of work, but they really don't have a plan. And so when I'm sitting down counseling with somebody, I say, look, let's make sure that we're not jumping out of the fire into the frying pan, or out of the frying pan and into the fire. Let's make sure that we are very intentional about crafting a plan that is going to ultimately lead to success. And because of my faith background, I believe that God has crafted and created each one of us uniquely. I believe that he has a master plan for all of us. And so I always want to start with, well, how has God made me? How has God gifted me? And what is God's plan and design in my life? And so one of the tools and resources that has been helpful for me and where I start everybody else, if you come and they're asking for counseling, I start them with a career direct assessment. This is a lengthy assessment that a person can take, and it helps them understand. Let's first start with how God crafted us and designed us, our uniqueness, and let's unpack that. And once we understand God's design and plan in our life, then we can start to craft a plan that is ultimately going to be successful. I mean, so many times I find people that are unhappy in life, and it's because that they are living outside of their God-given design. You know, God made them for one thing, and they're off operating in a completely different career field, you know, because, well, my mom and dad encouraged me to do this when I was younger. I never really had faith and confidence that I would be good at this other line of work. But once we come in alignment with how God made us, it's amazing what happens.
And we should mention the Career Direct, available through Crown, one of the great resources that Crown Ministries offers. And you can find it more at crown.org, right? That's the best website?
Yes, sir. Go to crown.org, and there's lots of resources there, and people will be able to take the next steps for a career direct assessment right there on that website.
All right, we've got some copies of Robert's great book, Love Your Work, 4 Practical Ways You Can Pivot to Your Best Career. And we'll talk about that word pivot and get into some of those practical ways in the moments ahead. And we invite you to join the conversation. You might have a question about it, or maybe you are asking on behalf of someone in your family who needs some good career counsel and advice. The doctor is in today, if you will. Robert Dickey III, president of Crown Financial Ministries, author of several books, including Love Your Work. And you can join in the conversation at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Now, we do have 4 copies of this great little book to give away, and it's filled with practical insights and encouragement. It'd be a good kind of primer, a step-by-step approach that you could take to kind of helping get your 2018 off and a great work start. So give us a call, sign up for a copy of the book. We'll do the drawing here at the top of the hour, 877-93-FAITH. Or if you have a question, want to join the conversation, you can go online, use the email tab on the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. More with Robert Dickey just ahead. Today, talking about acknowledging God's gifting and creating in our lives and how we can live out our careers to the fullest in honoring the Lord. Robert Dickey has served as a decorated Air Force officer, a CEO of an international company, a leader of several nonprofits. He became president of Crown Financial Ministries back in 2011, and his unique career path has made Bob familiar with our changing job market and how to navigate it. And he's written a wonderful book called Love Your Work, 4 Practical Ways You Can Pivot to Your Best Career. And this book before that, The Leap, Launching Your Full-Time Career in a Part-Time Economy, very helpful insights as well. Bob, give us a sense of maybe where we are today in the economy. Is it still kind of a part-time economy? I mean, the recession was a long time ago. Markets up. Does that mean that things are looking good employment-wise?
Well, the markets are up, as you know. And I call them the Great Recession refugees, those folks who lost their jobs back in 2007, 2008. Many of them have found employment. But and we take a look at we had record high unemployment levels back in, say, 2007 to 2009. As this tectonic shift was taking place, not only in our economy, but the global economy. Now, if you take a look at the latest figures that came out in December, our unemployment levels have gone down to about 4.1%, and everyone's cheering that very low number. But it actually hides, I think, some structural issues that we're still dealing with in the United States and actually globally. There's many people who are having a hard time finding full-time work. There's lots of jobs to be had in different sectors of in part-time work, but because of the cost of health care, many companies are trying to leverage part-time labor, trying to keep certain segments of their employee population under 30 hours a week so they don't have to pay for benefits. The millennial generation, young people, they're coming out of college and they're piecing together, 2 and 3 different jobs to make it work. And that's why you're hearing things called the part-time economy or the gig economy. It's just becoming now more of a commonplace where not only families have 2 jobs, but there might be 2 or 3 jobs within a family to make ends meet. So there's major changes afoot. Technology is really driving a lot of this. One of the largest jobs within the United States is a driver, right? People within the transportation industry, anywhere from taxis to delivery trucks to semi-trailers. It employs a majority or a large portion of men in the U.S. economy. And experts are saying, look, there's going to be massive job loss there within the next 5 and 10 years as big companies are looking at how they can use automated driving, and you know, Uber has come on the scene, and various technology companies like this. So there's structural changes happening, not just in the technology space, in the transportation space. Every single industry is going through these fundamental changes, and it's impacting the workforce. So what's important, no matter where we're at, no matter what job we have, is that we have our eyes wide open, and we're using discernment and understanding and seeing how technology is going to impact our career field. And people, all of us, we need to be aware. We don't need to be fearful, but we need to be taking proactive steps to add soft skills, to add other skills to our resume, and start crafting and designing the future that we want to be in. I think people who are going to be the most hurt are those who just think that everything's going to be fine. I'm not going to make any changes. I'm just going to go about my daily business and just let things happen. I think a lot of times those individuals will be caught off guard, and they won't be prepared for the changes within within their industry.
You mentioned soft skills. I know you have a chapter on that, and really it's at the heart of what we really need to understand, isn't it? And, I mean, there's some transcendent career skills that are never going to be outdated. Let's talk about those.
Yeah, so a lot of times people will be reading the newspapers and hearing about the new jobs that are being created for the future, and there's all sorts of things within technology and the various skills, the hard skills, you know, degrees and so forth that we can go out and obtain to be viable employees for the future. And those are very important things to do. But here's something that's really interesting. The soft skills, as you've mentioned, that those are the transcending career skills that never go out of style, that are always in vogue, that companies and leaders need. And so as I talk with CEOs around the country who are looking for employees to come in and run key areas of their operation, you know, they're saying, Bob, you know, I'm just looking for somebody who's got, you know, great work ethic, someone who's got some hustle, you know, people who will show up on time and work hard, you know, they're diligent in their job, you know, people who understand how to problem solve, they think quick on their feet. I mean, these aren't things that you learn in college. These are just great, you know, everyday life skills, soft skills that if we have some gumption, we have good work ethic, we can go in and prove ourselves, and that this is what leaders are looking for. Another thing, you know, people are looking, and leaders are specifically looking for employees that have emotional intelligence, who understand how to relate with other people, how to communicate, how to de-escalate situations, people who don't bring drama into the workplace. These are just things that I think that for those of us who are versed in Scripture, I mean, these are principles that are taught in Scripture. These are things that we as believers, we ought to be, kind of like the forebears of this. We ought to be setting the example on these types of things and how we engage with people with kindness and with love and with respect, you know, a strong work ethic. You know, my dad taught me as I was growing up, he said, Bob, it doesn't matter what you do. You do it for the glory of God, and you always do a hard day's work. You always work hard, no matter what it is. You do your absolute best, knowing that whether you are mopping floors or you're out working late in the Pepsi factory, no matter what, you're doing it to honor and glorify God. And you be a great representative of the faith, and you do a great job. And so I would implore people to have that same type of discipline and work ethic, no matter where you're at. God will bless you.
Good word today as we talk about those important basics that we need to cover. Robert Dickey III is president of Crown Financial Ministries, and he's author of the book Love Your Work, talking about today four practical ways you can pivot to your best career. Robert, you said, you know, things like problem solving, not something we always learn in school. Are there some ways that we can improve our problem solving skills? Because that really is, I guess, probably the essence of work, isn't it? I mean, work is about solving problems.
It really is. I heard recently someone say that business is nothing more than solving people's problems at a profit. And problem-solving skills for an individual, for an employee, is very important. It really what it boils down to for an employee, no matter where you're at, is having a deeper understanding of what's going on in the business and really caring. Right, so if I encourage my children, people who come in and counsel with me, I say, look, understand what is important for your boss. Do everything you possibly can to make your boss's job easier. Try to make them successful in what they're doing. And if you do that, you're by default, you're problem solving for your boss. You're taking workload off of his or her plate. You're helping them accomplish the tasks that they may have. You're going to become a rising star. Another thing is, you know, some people will just come in and kind of punch the clock and do the least amount that they possibly can and just, okay, I'm working for the weekend and I really don't care. That's not a great way to have success in our career fields. But if we walk in and into the company and we're doing our job, but we're seeing areas where the company can do better, we're seeing areas of opportunity, and we take the initiative and we start to understand how all these various pieces of the organization are coming together, we can glean insights. And we can come to our bosses, our superiors, and say, hey, look, I'm noticing X, Y, and Z. You know, I have a solution for this problem, or I think that we could do this, this, and this, and this would have a great opportunity for the company. Employers are looking for employees who are taking the initiative to solve problems. You know, I know CEOs can't be at every place within the organization. They're relying upon people to have insight and inspiration and ideas and to come to board meetings or to other meetings with ideas and solutions. And so that's a big element of problem solving. I tell you, no matter what industry you're in, if you become a problem solver and you're seen as a person with initiative that are trying to help the organization accomplish its goals, those individuals become fast rising stars that have lots of opportunity in front of them.
We're going to dive in a little bit deeper into the quadrants, the four zones, practical ways we can pivot to our best career. But, you know, they're kind of based on several things, and you have a number of graphs throughout the book that talk, you know, show a passion line and an opportunity line and I guess maybe a skill line. I mean, those three, what passion, opportunity, and skill, those are really at the heart of what we're talking about, aren't they?
Absolutely. So, you know, there's two that are very, very important, which is your opportunity and passion. And obviously where we want to be is we want to be in a spot within the economy that has a high growth potential, lots of opportunity for either career advancement. You know, it's very painful when we're in the opposite, right? When we're in a part of the economy that may be dying. Imagine when Henry Ford, you know, launched the Model T. This is what an example I use in the book. You know, it wasn't too long before the makers of horse and buggy carriages and horse whips were put out of business. It's very painful if we're in one of those sectors that are being put out of business. So we want to be in the zone of opportunity. So, but a lot of times people will say, oh, here's the zone of opportunity in the economy. Let me just rush out there and do it. But if we're not designed to do that type of work, if we're not living in our God-given design, we're going to be unhappy. And so that's why it's also important that we have passion for what we're doing. And ultimately, people say, well, I wonder what I'm passionate about. I wonder what I would be excited about doing. You know what? When we operate in God's design for us, and we're doing exactly what we've been designed and created for, we're going to be passionate about it because that's where we're going to have success. So those are two things that we have to monitor, and that's how I spell it out in the four quadrants.
We're going to jump in more and talk about four practical ways you can pivot to your best career, talking Love Your Work with Robert Dickey III. Phone lines are open at 877-93-FAITH. We've got four copies of the book to give away, and we'd welcome your calls, 877-933-2484. More in a moment.
You're by my side. When you don't move the mountains, I'm needing you to move. When you don't part the waters, I wish I could walk through. When you don't give the answers, as I cry out to you, I will trust, I will trust, I will trust in you.
Talking about work today and making work meaningful and engaging, and maybe 2018 is a year that you make some changes there in your career. You could pivot to your best career, and we're going to give you some ways to do that. Robert Dickey has written about it in his great little book called Love Your Work, Four Practical Ways You Can Pivot to Your Best Career. Robert has experienced lots in the world of careers. He's been a decorated Air Force officer. He's been a CEO of an international company, a leader of several nonprofits. But he's also he's worked hard and you know, with a young family, doing lots of labor and things that he understands what it's like to go through difficult seasons. And so he offers great career advice and counsel through his books. And you can also find out more the resources available, the Career Direct and other assessments available at crown.org, crown.org. Bob, the book subtitle used the word pivot. Just say a word about pivot. What does that mean, maybe as opposed to some other word you could have used?
Well, what I've found is that in life, a lot of times we can leverage what we have done in our past, you know, into the future. You know, sometimes if you want to have an idea of what God may have planned for you in the future, you can look in your past, because our past is always a part of how God is uniquely crafting us and designing us. He puts us in situations where we learn skills, where we're molded and we're refined. And so nothing that we go through is by accident. It's all by design. And so when we look in our past, you know, we can see, hey, God was preparing me, preparing us for leadership positions and roles that we have in the future. And so a lot of times people are thinking, well, man, I need to just to completely reinvent myself. Now, there's times out there where we need to do that, but many times it's just an ever slight pivot or a slight adjustment, you know, taking just a slight detour from where we're at. God's got another opportunity for us. And so sometimes it requires a complete reinvention, but many times just a slight alteration in what we're doing in our life opens up all sorts of new doors of opportunity.
Well, you talked about that R word, reinvention, but you have four other words that we want to talk about, and you talk about those four zones of the career quadrant. Let's jump into those.
Yeah, so the one I just mentioned was reinvention. There are times in our life where we may need to reinvent ourselves. And we saw during the Great Recession where people lost their jobs. And specifically, I call out the folks that were in the kind of the Rust Belt within the United States, my hometown of Flint, Michigan, where General Motors was closing down factories and those jobs were being sent overseas. There was no hope to kind of do a slight pivot there. People just needed to reinvent themselves and do something new. And so there's a whole series of steps and things that we need to do, whether it's maybe new skills, some new education. But there are times in our life where we will need to reinvent ourselves. But the other one is revector. Sometimes we'll find ourselves in the zone where we just need to revector ever so slightly. And this is an area where maybe we have a ton of passion for what we're doing. We know for a fact that we're living in God's given design in our life. We're excited about it. But for whatever reason, we have low opportunity. Maybe we've hit the glass ceiling, or there's just no opportunity at the place where we're working. And this causes us to just revector ever so slightly, still staying in our zone of passion, but finding new opportunities. The exact opposite of that would be where we have lots of opportunity. So imagine somebody, and I highlight an attorney that was in a career field, and he had lots of opportunity in front of him, but he did not like what he was doing. And he needed to repurpose his life, completely repurpose. Again, it was a multiple step process for him to repurpose, but there was lots of opportunity in front of him, but he just realized, you know what, this isn't what God's called me to do. God's called me to do something else. And so sometimes we need to repurpose. Now, where we ultimately want to be, we ultimately want to be in the zone of renewal. This is where we have high passion for what we're doing. We're excited. We know that we're living in God's design. We also have lots of opportunity. Now, here's the challenge, though. If when we find ourselves in that zone of renewal, if we are not constantly being renewed in our mind, in our spirit, adding new skills and staying abreast of what's going on in the economy, you know, pushing the limits and trying to get better every day, being a lifelong learner, if we just kind of rest on our laurels and we just kind of take it easy, what's going to happen is the world is constantly changing around us. We will find that we will fall out of that zone of renewal, where we have high passion and high opportunity, and we will find ourselves back in one of the other three quadrants, either the zone of revectoring, the zone of repurposing, or the zone of reinvention. So once we find that sweet spot where we're supposed to be, it takes work to stay there, right? It's like a body in motion doesn't just automatically stay in motion. It needs continual energy to kind of keep moving forward. So that's what I encourage people to do. And each one of those zones has certain strategies and tactics and things that we can do. And so that's what I outline in the book.
Say a bit more about that, you know, the energy and the persistence needed maybe in, you know, making a transition or just staying, you know, in to keep pursuing that renewal zone, because it's, you know, as you say, entropy takes over, right? And we can get busy. You got six kids, you know, I mean, life gets in the way of work sometimes.
Well, it really does. And, you know, unfortunately, we live in a day and age where it seems like more and more is expected of us, more and more is placed on us in our jobs. You know, we read in the newspapers of, you know, people wearing multiple hats and doing multiple duties. But we can't get caught up in that busyness. We understand that if we get caught up in that busyness and it takes over and we don't have the attention in our spiritual life, what will happen with our relationship with our Creator God? We have to build in opportunities for us to have time for renewal, both within our spiritual walk, both within our marriage and relationships, but it also in our work. So, you know, learning and developing, it is critical in today's economy for all of us to be a lifelong learner. You know, I have a college professor at Harvard Business School, and he said that the average lifespan of a college degree today is 3 years. And that's because the world is changing so rapidly. And he said, you know what, our grandparents used to be able to go to college, get some education, and then leverage that education for 30 or 40 years in their career. Today, things are changing so rapidly, we have to constantly stay plugged in and be getting new skills and updating. Otherwise, the world's going to pass us by. So regardless of where we're at, whether we're in ministry, whether we're in radio and media, whether we're, you know, in technology, it doesn't mean that we have to go back to college, but what it means is that we're staying abreast of the changes within our space. We're reading periodicals. We're going out and getting free education online courses like MOOCs, massive open online courses that are free for everyone. But you know, I highlight all the strategies that we can use to become a lifelong learner, and you know, stay ahead of these changes that might impact us in our careers.
It's a document, well documented and researched and helpful resource called Love Your Work, 4 Practical Ways You Can Pivot to Your Best Careers, from Robert Dickey III. Bob's with us today on Connecting Faith. We do have 4 copies, by the way, of this book to give away. So I want to just encourage you. We'll do that drawing here at the top of the hour. This would be a great resource as we head into the new year to get reinvigorated and push toward that renewal zone for your work and career. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number, 877-933-2484. Bob, say a bit about, help us, are there some ways we can determine if we should maybe do a pivot, a little revector within a company or moving to a new location and station? How do we determine some of that?
Oh, that is a great question. I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of times when I sit down with someone, we start counseling on these particular topics. They'll be frustrated. They're in an area of frustration, like, can't stand my boss or can't stand my job. I just want to do something different. And I always encourage people, never run from something, always run to something. And so a lot of times, you know, we get in a situation that is uncomfortable, we don't like, it's like, all right, I'm just going to quit. I'm just going to go someplace new, and it's going to fix the problem. And you know what? That doesn't fix the problem. A lot of times our problems follow us. And so I say, you know what, are there ways, maybe our best opportunity is right where God has planted us. Maybe our best opportunity is right there. Is there a relational issue that's causing you to want to leave? Let's fix that. Are there certain things that are happening at your job? Maybe you love the people you work with. Maybe you love the company, but you feel like there's not opportunity. Maybe if we go in and we talk to our boss and say, you know what, you know, I've been here for a while and I've got some extra time on my hands and I'm ready for some new challenges. I'm ready to take on more responsibility. How can I help you, my boss, be better? How can I and achieve your goals? How can I, you know, help the organization achieve their goals? And when we have that type of initiative, I have seen people who have walked in and they're like, well, there's no opportunity for me at this company. But when they change their mindset and they start looking for opportunity and they approach leadership, all of a sudden, they see all sorts of opportunity that happens around them. They never had to leave. They just had to take initiative. They just had to ask. And so sometimes our very best opportunity might be where God has us. You know, one thing that I would like to add, you know, that the title of the book is Love Your Work. And some people, you know, may be in a spot where it's like, well, I dislike what I'm doing. And Bob, I've been trying to change. I've been trying to transition. And for whatever reason, you know, these doors of opportunity just aren't opening up. Here's a word of encouragement for someone who might be there. I am a firm believer that nothing in our life happens by accident. And I believe that God will place us in spots sometimes they will be challenging spots. But you know where I have learned the most? Do you know where I have grown the most, where my faith with my Lord and Savior has grown the most? It's been in those times of challenge, those dark seasons. And so if a person finds themselves in that spot, look at it not from as something you want to run away from, but ask yourself the question, how's God talking to me right now? How's God molding and refining me? I believe he's preparing you for something better in your future. I mean, take a look at the story of Joseph. Joseph went through a very arduous process, but God was molding and refining him, preparing him for that great leadership role that he had in Joseph. So that may be what someone is going through today. So don't be discouraged. Always have faith. Always have hope, knowing that God is craft. Everything is in God's design, and he has a plan for you.
Man, that's just that'll preach, Bob. Thank you for sharing your encouragement with us today. And I know that you often say, like John Maxwell and many others, leaders are readers. Just curious, what's on your bookshelf these days that you're planning to read or in the middle of?
Well, my boss just wrote a new book. Chuck Bentley, our CEO, just came out with a new book, which I think is absolutely brilliant. And I think for anyone who's starting the new year and wanting to better their relationships and also have a better grasp on their finances, the title is Money Problems, Marriage Solutions. Mm-hmm. And so it's an incredible book, I think, for couples out there. I'd highly recommend getting that one. You know, I'll tell you another one that I'm really interested in. This is a business book, and it's titled Simple Rules. And so for those of you who are in business, you know, I'd highly recommend you picking it up. It talks about how we can take very complex situations and things and just boil it down to a couple of simple rules that we can use to have success no matter what we're doing in our business or professional lives. So right now those are two that I have read and am reading, and I absolutely love both.
Well, Bob, we appreciate any time we have a chance to talk with you, and blessings to you as you continue to lead at Crown Financial Ministries. He's the president of Crown Financial Ministries and author of the great book, Love Your Work. And we've got some copies to give away. It's out from Moody Press. Find out the great resources available at crown.org, crown.org. And Bob, I look forward to chatting with you again down the road soon. Blessings to you in the new year.
Blessings to you as well. It's always an honor to be on the program. Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. It's Wednesday. That means we connect with Leith Anderson, and he's coming up in just a moment. Stay tuned. To Connecting Faith, and it's time once again to connect with Leith Anderson. Leith is president of the National Association of Evangelicals. For 35 years, he was a pastor of Wooddale Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and has written a number of books. We're always honored to talk with him as we connect on issues of faith and culture in the church. And Leith, I noticed that the NAE is hosting a Christian Student Leadership Conference later this month. And I was interested in getting your sense of maybe what today's young person, how they look at evangelicalism, because it seems like, you know, it's been so closely aligned with maybe the Republican Party. Obviously, evangelicals played a part in electing Trump, and get the sense that maybe students don't necessarily agree with the president's policies. So how do you see them viewing evangelicalism today?
Oh, that is such a huge question. Well, let me just say the NAE Student Leadership Conference actually has been going on for over a half century, and some of our alumni have gone on to really significant positions in government. But the current generation, those that we have coming to our annual conference, they're collegians, and they do have some new characteristics. They're really different from their parents and their grandparents in lots of different ways. And, you know, their faith certainly isn't all about politics. They tend to be team players. Community is important, less individualism than in the past. They're especially concerned about issues of compassion and justice. Those are recurring themes that they want to engage on behalf of the poor and the vulnerable. Most of them have not yet voted, or if they have voted, they've just voted recently. And I think that maybe this is a bit of a cop-out, but it's a little bit too soon to tell what all they're going to do. But I think they're going to change a lot of emphasis in both politics and in faith.
Yes, and also, Leith, one of the aspects of the conference, I know, is to speak for those who have no voice. You touched on it there, mentioning the poor. Can you just say more about this, and should this really be a core responsibility of all believers?
Well, it should be a core responsibility because that's what the Bible teaches. You know, there are over 2,000 references in the Bible to the poor and the vulnerable, and that's what Jesus did. You know, when he started out his public ministry, he said that he'd come to preach the good news to those who were poor, those who were on the margins of society. And the famous Bible stories that we have are how he related to people with disabilities, with diseases, women, minorities, people that others wouldn't have anything to do with. So that is so central to both the Old and the New Testament, and especially to the ministry of Jesus and his followers of Jesus, then we need to make that a priority as well. And I think younger adults really see that Jesus came to serve others, and we have been called to serve others as well as followers of Jesus.
You know, is followers of Jesus, do you think phrases like that will become more common in terms of use than maybe even the word evangelical, which, you know, as we talked about, maybe it's still too early to tell how today's younger generation looks at it, but it seems like maybe the word itself has got a different perspective.
That is probably the most frequent question I'm asked. You know, the simple answer is that evangelical has not lost its historic, biblical, global meaning, but the term has been compromised, especially by politics here in the United States. You know, the quick lesson is that evangelical is actually a New Testament word. It's two words. The EV or EU in Greek is the word for good, and the other part of it, from the Greek, euangelion, is the word for messenger, angel. That's where we get our word angel. So you put it together, and evangelical means good news, and the good news of Jesus is forever. But it's true that people in American politics and media have associated the term with politicians, with political parties, with policies. But we need to keep in mind there are over 600 million evangelicals around the world, and over 500 million of them don't know much about American politics and don't align with them. So it gets kind of confusing. The bottom line here is that the term really isn't what matters most. Evangelicals are Christians who take the Bible seriously, have committed to Jesus Christ as Savior and Lord, and that's us. And their numbers are growing, especially in Africa, Asia, Latin America. So whatever we're called is not most important. It's the Bible and it's Jesus that's most important. And, you know, as you said, Neil, it's probably too soon to tell what's going to happen to the evangelical label. Certainly other labels like Christian and America, even Tylenol, have been compromised. And they've gone on and they've survived. And I hope that happens with the term evangelical as well.
Yeah. Leith, I know that the NAE does a monthly leadership survey, and I think it was last month that the question was, you know, should pastors know who gives to the church? I was interested in the results. Talk about the findings.
Why do I want to ask you two what you think? Okay, that's not fair. I know you're asking the question.
Yeah.
I really, you think about that while I give a quick answer.
Okay.
You know, we do the Evangelical Leader Survey once a month. About 70% say that pastors should be able to know who gives to their churches, and most of that 70% also thought the pastors should be able to know how much. But there are others who felt strongly that they shouldn't know. Now, those who think pastors shouldn't know say it will affect how they minister to their church members, and those who think that pastors should know say that stewardship is part of discipleship, and pastors are responsible to make disciples of Jesus. And, you know, I fully recognize that situations vary, but, I generally agree that pastors should have access to donor names and numbers. I think of one response that we got in this survey. It was really kind of interesting, if not clever. It says, if your pastor can't be trusted with this information, your church should get another pastor who can be trusted.
Wow. Well, yeah. I guess, I mean, this maybe isn't, is this sort of just a modern, sensitivity? Was this maybe something, certainly the early church, I assume, everything was held in common. There wasn't a lot of, conversation maybe about this very thing.
Yeah, it is kind of modern, and it's also kind of American. I think of a friend of mine who grew up in a rural church in Wyoming, And she said that in January, every year, they posted on the bulletin board the names of all the church members and how much they gave, and everybody would gather around and look at it.
Oh.
So that's not the way we do it today. But, yeah, I think it's a cultural thing. I don't think it's a biblical thing. And, you know, money is important in American society, and so is Christian faith. And when we line them together, then, you know, probably if the pastor's going to be effective, they need to know that information.
I want to be able to say thank you, I would think, too, so that's important. Yeah. We're talking with Leif Anderson again, the president of the National Association of Evangelicals here on Connecting Faith. So it's a new year, Leif. Do you have any advice for establishing realistic New Year's resolutions, perhaps, or goals, especially for spiritual growth?
Yeah, you two never answered about my question.
No, we didn't. So.
So maybe I should morph that over. Tell what your New Year's resolutions are. Well, you know, you say they should be realistic, and actually that's a good word to add in there. We tend to make resolutions that are about what we would like to do rather than what we're actually going to do. And there's a tendency for resolutions to be too big and too many and too hard. So those who really want some resolutions for spiritual growth, they should go for it. You know, pick one, maybe two, but a few, not too many. Write them down. Have a plan. Keep in mind, which I constantly have to remind myself of, that to change a habit and do something new, you need to do it for months before it becomes established. And probably a good idea to tell somebody else that you're doing this so there's some accountability. And as far as spiritual growth is concerned, you know, the usual things maybe, to consider daily prayer, Bible reading, financial stewardship, volunteering. We talked about helping the poor and the vulnerable. Maybe some specific resolutions about how to do that in 2018. And it's also really helpful to a lot of people to read at least one spiritual growth book during the year.
You know, I'll tell you, you know, one of my resolutions, I guess, just goals or maybe just reaffirmations was, you know, it's easy to get, you know, busy reading those spiritual growth books or other books. And, of course, I do that a lot. And so I end up, you know, reading more books than I probably spend time in the Bible. I thought I just need to recommit to getting back to, and I know all the studies about, you know, if you engage with the scriptures 4 days a week, it's really making a difference. So I guess, you know, for me, that was one of mine, to just say, getting back into the scripture. I mean, all the other things are important, but that that seems like that's a pretty fundamental one.
Yeah, well, read the Bible. It's also possible to read the Bible and be thinking about something else.
Yeah.
Actually, study the Bible. I try to read the Bible through in a year, and I don't usually make it. So, I finish reading it in March or April or February or June. But I've had times when I thought, you know, I got to stop just setting a date goal. I need to stop long enough and look some things up and find out what does that actually mean. And I discover there are things in the Bible that I probably read multiple times, and I never even knew they were there before. And I need to. You know, it's like our conversation with each other. We need to listen to each other. We need to interact. We need to do that with the Bible if we really can understand what God's saying to us.
Yeah.
Always good to talk with you, to listen and to interact. Leif Anderson is president of the National Association of Evangelicals, longtime pastor and author, and so appreciate your time with us regularly here on Connecting Faith. And again, Leif, blessings to you in the new year.
Great. Thanks, and have a great 2018, Neil and Ted.
Ted, just love his advice, simple advice. Read the Bible.
Get in the Word.
Okay,
yeah.
Sure. By the way, let me just tell you, we've got a great study Bible we're giving away this month. Chuck Swindoll, of course, has been giving biblical teaching and wisdom for so many years, has put out a study Bible, and we've got the copy we're giving away one a week, all during the month of January.
Easy to register for. Just go to myfaithradio.com, and you'll see the Chuck Swindoll Bible giveaway. Sign up right there, myfaithradio.com.
That would be a great resource to start out your new year and help you grow in your faith. The Swindoll Study Bible, giving it away once a week here on Faith Radio. Sign up today, myfaithradio.com. Hope you enjoyed the conversation today with Robert Dickey. If you missed that, we'll post the interview here shortly, and you can listen to it again and pass it on a friend at myfaithradio.com. And click on the Connecting Faith show page, and we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.